Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries. Welcome to our seventh year of broadcasting on epostle.net. We welcome you and thank you for making the next step with Father Vazquez, the premier listening experience about spirituality through Orthodoxy. Here, Father Vazquez provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. These shows are produced every week at epostle.net for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Voskin, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 323 of The Next Step, a podcast, well, that connects the dots, that takes the most ancient of all Christian traditions, Armenian Orthodoxy, polishes it up for today in an Armadoxy way, and we connect the dots between here and there, you and them, up there, down here, whatever it may be. This podcast is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission, and of course is brought to you by all those cool folks. I see them right out there at epostle.net. Hey, if you're ready, I know I am. Let's take the next step. So good to have you with us. Hello, everybody out there. I am excited today. We just finished recording something that I've been waiting to do for a long time. Yes, since we opened up the huge Epostle.net studio in Glendale this morning, we recorded a new episode of Compass with Linda, and it was so exciting. I'm so glad. That's probably going to premiere this weekend on Epostle.net. You want to check that out. We talked about some cool things, about some connections between New Mexico, that's here in the States, right? New Mexico, Scotland, and Armenia. And going to be telling you about that. Well, you next steppers know what I'm talking about. You know where I'm going with that. Well, anyway, we're debuting it this week, and hopefully it's going to be a regular podcast until the time we go to Armenia. I'm going to be sharing a lot of ideas with you. So look forward to that. I am excited that we just had a chance to record that. A lot of new and good ideas coming out over there. Today I wanted to start off. Actually, I had a lot of things to talk to you about, but of course, 2 days ago, we were slapped with this news of the death of Robin Williams, comedian. They call him a comedian. And when we find out, struggling with depression, struggling with drug addiction, we find out he committed suicide. And I don't know if it's really sunk in with a lot of people, but I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about this here on The Next Step, because I think it's so, so critical that we really take these as opportunities for us to talk about some of the hidden darkness that is all around us. Yeah, it's not too pleasant to talk about, but hey, we talk about unpleasant things here on The Next Step. I know it's not a rating booster, but let me talk a little bit about it because I think it's important. The same day that we heard about Robin Williams's death, I was scheduled to attend a seminar about feelings. And this was here in Glendale, and it was in the Armenian language, which I did not expect. I did not expect this to be what it was. And I was just really, I was really excited about it once I got there, because they were talking candidly and openly. And the leader of the group, Armina Gurgin is her name. She teaches at Glendale College. But she was doing the seminar, and she started off the seminar by talking about Robin Williams' death and went into some of the dimensions of depression, of bipolarism, of some of the difficulties that creative individuals have. And I found it to be a fascinating talk. Actually, it was a discussion, and I really enjoyed that more than anything else. It was a two-way conversation between the people attending the seminar and herself. And, you know, I always enjoy these kind of conversations. It's there where I think the most learning happens. I mean, think about yourself, too. Think about the teachers that have had most influence in your life. Were they the ones who just stood up in front of a blackboard and... I was going to say whiteboard, yeah, blackboard, and lectured you, or were they the real teachers, the one that engaged you in conversation, that got you to think, that got you to ask the questions that are so essential to learning, to the learning process? And when we start asking, we start exploring, and that exploration process is a vital one to the learning process. I never got into the ones that just got up in front and lectured. I go back to my chemistry days. You know, you remember the chemistry teacher get up. Well, you'd have to lecture you. There's nothing to discuss. It's black and white. It's basically this is this, you know, two molecules of, hydrogen to one molecule of oxygen, and you got a water molecule, okay? There's no two ways about it. But when you come to matters of faith, definitely, and that's why we call our exploration questions in faith, and when you come to issues of the soul, of the mind, of the body, there's theories. There are many theories because it is so unknown. In fact, that's what we call the mystery of life. Mystery means, yeah, it's unknown. I don't know what it is. So let me explore. The last few days have been the meteor shower here. I think it's in the northern hemisphere. I don't think you people in the southern hemisphere get a chance to see this. But every August 12th, 13th, 14th, it peaks. You get a chance to see this incredible meteor shower. And as you're looking up into the heavens, it's just such a natural process in which you engage looking up there and saying, okay, what are these things going across the sky? And you realize that they're debris left over from the beginning of all time. Some of it, you know, the beginning of our solar system, beginning of all time, in fact, from the beginning of the universe. And they're finding their final home, their final resting place as they get into the Earth's atmosphere and they streak across the sky. They disintegrate. It's over. 13 billion years they've been traveling. They've been just like out there in space. Or forget about the beginning of the universe. I'd say a billion years, 2 billion years, whatever it is. It's inconceivable. And so you get into the realm of mystery and you start trying to explain it. And, well, people have different explanations. The Big Bang Theory. Now, remember that word, okay? The Big Bang. It's a theory. All right? Same thing with creationism. It's a theory, okay? You can relegate it to faith. You could say that, okay, because I believe in God, I believe that there's a creator to all of this. That's fine. But you can't convince everybody of it, can you? Because the mind wanders. The mind wanders and says, okay, well, if there is a God, what is the nature of this God? You say, well, God is good. Okay? And you say, well, if God is good, not everything is good. I see things that are really kind of messed up in this world. And you start thinking. You start exploring. You throw out answers. You throw out questions, definitely, but you also throw out answers. And in this throwing out process, that's the dialogue process. And so I was very, very excited to see that this was taking place in an ethnic community like the Armenian community that we have here in Glendale. People talking and engaging in a conversation about something very unpleasant, depression, about suicide, about mental illness. And, you know, I had a chance to reflect on Robin Williams' passing in a very different way. Because in many senses, I can understand the loneliness. And let me explain that, okay? I thought for a moment about him standing up in front of a crowd. Sometimes in front of a stadium, in front of the soldiers. And, you know, applause, laughing, and that gets you high. There is a high that goes with that. It's much like what a priest goes through when he celebrates the divine liturgy. It's a high. It takes you to a different place. I sometimes, during the divine liturgy, I mean, you get taken away by the prayers. They are so intense. I've shared this with you many times. One of my pet peeves is when people assume that because I speak English, because I speak English, my wish is that the Divine Liturgy can be celebrated in the English language. And there's this presumption. People throw that out at me. In fact, we were in, where was that? I think it was in Lori, in one of the areas in Armenia. We were in Lori in a hotel, and some priest was there from, I can't remember where, one of the East Coast provinces. And he came up to me, and very nice guy, started speaking to me, and he said, you know, I'm the priest that does the English language services. And, looking for a little bit of excitement, and I can't get excited about that because it's not about language to me. To me, you have a divine liturgy that has the potential of taking you up to the heavens. Why would you minimalize it by making it a discussion about language? It's not about understanding with your mind, but understanding with your soul, with your spirit. And when you get into the divine liturgy, it takes you places. It takes you into these places that are sometimes scary because you're just out there. Okay, imagine a free flow. You're just out there and you're looking for something to catch you. And you know what? The only thing that can catch you is the certainty that God is in charge. Now, that's a faith statement that I'm making right now, right? Well, that's the nature of who I am. And other people will not want to venture to those places because that's the nature of who they are. There's people who want everything concrete, want to know the answers, okay? If I see a shooting star, if I see something streak across the sky, well, there's people that will say, okay, that is just basically some dust, some stardust that is now extinguished and it has become a rock. And that rock is hurling to earth. And what you are seeing up there is this rock's demise, the disintegration, or the flaring up of this rock coming into the atmosphere at such a speed that it burns up. Okay, it's an explanation. Take away the mystery. I like the idea that, you know, they're these shooting stars. Stars are shooting around. Okay, now I'm not talking about this kind of mystery here, right? Because there's explanations for that. But there are things that you cannot explain. There are things that just go beyond your reasoning power. And some of those are those feelings that you have, those expressions that you have. It's what you see in each other's eyes. It's the feeling that you have when you hold someone's hand. It's the expression that you have when you look and gaze into your child and see the dreams that he or she has. It's a wide variety. It's the full gamut of emotions and exploration on your part. And so when I think about Robin Williams standing up there and he is on this high, I could relate to that high. I could relate to that high many times, and I think many of us can. In different things that we do. I would imagine that I've dabbled with some computer programming. I imagine that a computer engineer, for as calculated as you believe he or she may be, at some point that calculation is diminished by the excitement that he has when he or she develops a new program. And for the first time, he gives the instruction to the computer to run that program, and there it is. It's coming up on the screen, and it's doing the things. It's making a little character move from one side of the screen to the other, or it's developing formulas. It is interacting in these games, these video games that take you into all kinds of dimensions and everything. I mean, there's a creative process, and I know there's a celebration that goes with that creative process. This could be anything. It could be anything that you do. Is something like sewing, fixing a car. You get the car to run. You sew a dress, and it fits. It works. Okay, and there's an excitement that goes beyond the calculations of, okay, hem one, stitch two, whatever it is. Okay, so I can understand that high, and I think a lot of us can relate to those highs. We get those highs, and imagine someone like Robin Williams, who has this opportunity to be on a high just about all the time that he's on stage. But what happens when that stage collapses? What happens when the audience goes away and you're standing there alone? That's a very lonely place. It's a very, very lonely place. You're standing there and the audience is gone. And they've all applauded. They all like you. They all said, hey, great job. But then at the end of the day, you're standing there and you realize that, hey, you know, there's something more. I'm looking for something more. And sometimes you can define that more. Sometimes what happens is that people get mixed up and they say that because it is a more, it could be quantified. In other words, you could put a number to that more. And so you get caught up in having that more. Yeah, $5, I wish it was $10. You have $1 million, I wish it was $2 million. And I know how I can get that $2 million. I know how I can get that $3 million. Oh, if I know the $3 million, I know how to get the $6 million. And you get caught up in doing all of that. It's people who do that in all walks of life, including in religion. You know, when you think about some of the people who hold power within religion, some of the hierarchs, okay? You ever thought, what does it take to get to those positions? They have to be calculated. You have to learn how to play the game. You have to have ambition. And ambition, of course, is one of those difficult ones to bridle. Because once it gets away, it can go crazy on you. And honestly, living here in Southern California, such a high rate of materialism, this is one of the biggest problems that I run into. And I've shared this with you several times on The Next Step. Materialism is killing people. The need to have more. Because there's a basic emptiness, there's a basic question that you want answered. And when you don't get those questions answered, you fall down. I'm going to play the song of the day right now. Now I'll come back and talk a little bit more about it. Are you with me? I hope you are. Ken's nodding over there. I guess. Hey, yeah, you like it? Okay. it's a little bit different than what we were talking about earlier when Linda was in the studio. But anyway, I'm going to play a song of the day. It's a different one. It's actually a Robin Williams tribute, okay? Yeah, if you know me, you know what I'm going to probably play. But his first movie, after he did all of his television stuff, the Mork and Mindy days, his first movie was Popeye the Sailor Man. And it wasn't that well received by the critics nor by the audiences. Actually, I remember Popeye was one of my favorite characters. More than Popeye was the dynamics that happened in Popeye. You know, you got this skinny little woman named Olive Oil, who would always play him against Bluto, this ugly brute, right? Never shaves and just, you know, and then Popeye would come along and she wouldn't give him the time of day. Popeye would always fight for her. And in the end, with his spinach in hand and mouth, then he would win the woman of his dreams back over to him. And anyway, this movie, I loved it, and I have to admit, the first time I saw it, I fell asleep through some of it, but that's not unusual for me. I do that all the time. But I have watched this several times. It's one of my favorites. I'm going to play Popeye the Sailor Man, Robin Williams singing it. Well, of course, a little introduction by who else but Olive Oil.
Oh, Popeye.
He's Popeye the Sailor Man.
Oh, my hero.
He's Popeye the Sailor Man. He's strong to the fish, cause he eats his spinach. He's Popeye the Sailor Man.
Oh, I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm strong to the finish, cause I eat me spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
He's Popeye the Sailor Man. He's Popeye the Sailor Man. He's strong to the finish, cause he eats his spinach. He's Popeye the Sailor Man.
One tough gazookas that hates all palookas that ain't on the up and square. I biffs them and buffs them and always out roughs them, and none of them gets nowhere. If anyone dares to risk me fisk, it's Buff and it's Wham understands. So keep good behavior, that's your one lifesaver with Popeye the Sailor Man.
He's Popeye the Sailor Man. He's Popeye the Sailor.
Chicken of the sea, yeah.
He's strong to the fish, cause he eats his spinach. He's Popeye the Sailor Man. He's Popeye the Sailor
Man. Robin Williams, his first movie, Popeye the Sailor Man. That was a fun one. Great, great, great talent. An incredible talent. Well, you know, in a lifetime you maybe see one. Maybe if you're lucky too, but you don't find this kind of talent. And gone at the age of 63. And we're reflecting back on his life. Many places they've been reflecting. I want to talk a little bit about the demons that seem to touch us, because when a life like this does touch us, it's beautiful to think of the beautiful memories that he does leave. In fact, it's become fashion lately. Fashion even in the dying industry. Many of the cemeteries and mortuaries will say celebrate life. Here in Southern California, there's a big, big corporation called Forest Lawn. They seem to have a monopoly on all the real estate dedicated to the dead. And their catchphrase lately has been celebrate a life. And so you go into the cemetery and here, we're going to celebrate life. And, you know, everything is sanitary. You don't see the death. You don't see the bodies. And all of a sudden, you've minimized the hurt and pain, which is very nice of them. But you've also minimized the grieving process, a very natural process, which is necessary at the end of life. And because you've done that, you've minimized the value of life. And I've been to several funerals where it's a celebration, it's a joyous event. And as a Christian, of course, you know, when you go in faith to these funerals and you see all the crying and the grieving, you realize that as a faithful person, really, your obligation is to make that day into a day of thanksgiving, to thank God for the life that was shared with us. But there is a grieving process that we cannot avoid. If that person had any impact on your life, of course you're going to miss that person. You're not going to see that person again. And there is a sadness to that. And we try to diminish that. You know, you go into some of these cemeteries and into these mortuaries, and God help you if you have to go into one of these to do business. In fact, you know, I was one of those people that said, you know, when the time comes, that's the time that you should go in there. Don't waste your life worrying about death. But I've taken a different tune. I suggest to many people, make your arrangements early for death. In other words, pick out your casket, pick out your grave, your tombstone, all that. Don't leave it for the people remaining. Why? Because when they go in there, hey, it is a business that they're running. It's a business. They're not there to help you. Come on. Get over that idea. They're there to sell graves, to sell a service. And I've seen people literally throw money into a hole. Yes, literally. Because that's what you're doing. That's what a funeral service is. I've seen people throw thousands of dollars into holes. Why? Because they go in there and they say, well, you know, that was your mother, wasn't it? You sure you want that casket? You know, look at this one over here. Hey, guess what? Mom's not going to feel that casket. That's the dad. You know, that's your dad. You loved your dad, didn't you? You know, don't you think that he would, Well, you know, there is a nice little piece of land over here under the tree. Of course, it's a few thousand dollars more, but, you know, there's something about that. You go and you sit down over there. Hey, come on, folks. It's a piece of land where rotting corpse is going to lie. I know, Father Voskin, don't talk about our loved ones as rotting corpse. That's not your loved one. That's a body. That's a body that was sacred. That was a body that housed a beautiful soul. And that soul lives on. And, you know, you really can't think in these terms after someone has gone away, because you want to do the best, obviously. And, you know, God help you if you had some kind of issue with that person. Oh, you're going to try to make it up. You couldn't make up while he or she was alive, so let's make up now. Get a better casket. Get a better piece of land. Let's go for the $13,000 funeral instead of the $10,000 funeral. Sure. It's a way of making amends. At least making your heart feel a little bit better, right? And so right now, I'm at that point where I suggest to many people, make your arrangements early. At least you do it. And save your family from that unnecessary wheeling and dealing. You know, you make it, and then when time comes, you just kind of just slip into the hole, so to speak, right? Okay, I told you today's not going to be one of those rating busters, right? People are going to listen to this and say, this is morbid. We don't want to talk about this stuff. But it's a necessary conversation. And I started off by talking about the depression that people of creativity find in a different way when they're standing there all alone. And now we move over to the means by which that depression was handled, and that was, of course, suicide. Another uncomfortable discussion, another uncomfortable issue. But let's talk about that as well. Whenever anybody talks about suicide, always they look over at the priest and they say, I know you guys won't do the service, but well, let me tell you something about suicide, okay? In the early church, suicide, you did not give burial to a person who committed suicide in the early church. Actually, in the church right now, too, legally. You don't. Why? Well, let's think about it logically. Suicide is a sin. You're taking away your own life, God's gift. But even more, it's what's considered the unforgivable sin. Why? Not because God doesn't want to forgive you, but you do not have an opportunity to repent. That's how simple it is, right? Why is it unforgivable? Well, you need to repent to have your sin forgiven. So traditionally, the church has always frowned on suicide and has said we won't do a burial of someone who committed suicide. And we've all heard about exceptions to the rules, and probably for all the wrong reasons. Because, you know, somebody's been willing to pay off that sin, so to speak. Let me tell you the reason why I've never shied away from doing a funeral for a suicide person, never shied away from saying yes to the family who approaches. And I hope you'll understand my logic in the same way that people of old would understand the logic of the unforgivable sin. I think it's an unforgivable sin if we don't do that funeral. Because as a Christian, if you know that the soul lives on, right, then that funeral service is not about the person who went away. Funerals are not about the dead people. It's about the living people. You as a priest are standing there with that family to offer comfort, to offer the words of Christ, to share with them the good news that life did not end at this grave, to talk about God's mercy, the one who forgave even the thief on the cross is full of mercy. If he could forgive the thief on the cross, surely he can forgive someone who is struggling with so much pain, addictions, disorders, that he or she decides that this is the only way out. Now, as a priest doing that, does that mean that I condone suicide? No. I hope you know me by now. Life is a celebration. Some people appeal to suicide because, in a way, there is a sense of hopelessness. There is a loneliness out there that they can't cope with. And much like you cope with your headache by dropping a few aspirin or Advil, same way, some pains are so great that you pop something even greater, right? Here's the problem with suicide, besides you going. It leaves a family beyond mourning. There are children, doesn't matter, like even in Robin Williams' case, older children. It's not about young or old. It's about this question that those remaining have to deal with. Could I have done something more so that Dad would not have died? Was it my fault? And I've seen so much self-blaming in these situations. I met a kid at his father's funeral. Father had committed suicide 15 years ago. 15 years later, now, I happened to run into him. He's got the same questions. He hasn't reconciled with his dad taking his own life. And that's a big one. Committing suicide, I know people call it like a coward's way out. It's not a coward way out. It's a mental disorder that brings you to that point. And here's a few parting shots that I want to leave you with today, okay? First of all, ours is not to judge. Let's get that really clear. The ultimate judge is God. Ours is to help and support one another, to nurture one another, to share the grandeur of God, the beauty of God with everyone, the beauty of his forgiving person, to share with the people the beauty of life, and you become the agent of God. Number two, suicide is definitely wrong. But when it does happen, it's not ours to judge. And when it happens, ours is for us to be there to console, to help that mourning process, to help people grieve and come out of it as healthy as possible. I don't want to say healthy, because I don't know if you can after that. And I'm talking from personal experience, just 32 years being a priest and tragically going through so many suicide cases. My first parish, I remember, tragically, it was a child who had passed away. And the child wasn't baptized. The priest before me, or a few generations before me, the priest who was there at the time, had not buried the child, had not given that child a burial service according to the Armenian church, because according to church traditions, the child must be baptized. Okay, you have to be baptized member of the church to receive the blessings of the church. Okay, very nice. It makes sense, but of course not to the family. How could you possibly say no to a family? How could you possibly say no to a grieving family who's come to you and saying, please help me. Give my child a funeral service. Give my dad, my mom, my kid, the one who's committed suicide, a funeral service. You say, no, I can't. It's against church regulation. Well, at that point, you realize that maybe these old regulations are exactly that. They're old. And they need the revision. And it's okay to think differently, to think outside of the box. It takes courage to do that. It means you have to put yourself in a different mold. There is a concept within the Orthodoxy called economia. It means that the needs of the church outweigh these rules and regulations. I paraphrase it, but you get the idea that there's a need. And you as a pastor, our bishops, our Catholicoi, they need to make these decisions, right? then what is the need of the church? What is the need of the community? And case in point, right now as I'm speaking about this, last Saturday, we had the funeral service of a very dear priest in our diocese, 92 years old, Father Shai Altunian. He was one of my mentors, one of the ones that I grew up with, looking up to him, somebody who had passion for the Armenian Church. And from what I hear, he was in very good health all the way to the end. He would celebrate the Divine Liturgy, still stand and give sermons, 92 years old. Last Saturday was his funeral service. And during the funeral, of course, as a priest, he is consecrated. And we were attending that service. And they had one of those memorial booklets that I was looking through. And there was his biography, and I read something that I knew. But it's worth saying over here when we're talking about economia, about the needs of the church, about the needs of the people, the needs of the community. He was ordained in the late 40s or 1940s, sometime then, and it was some years later, I believe 10 years later, 8 years later, whatever it was, he married. Now, if you know Orthodoxy, okay, the rule is, especially in the Armenian Church, is marriage before ordination. You have to be married in order to be ordained as a priest. Or if you're going to take monastic vows of celibacy, you have to make that very clear. And once you do it, there's no backing out. Yet this one was ordained as a priest and given the right to marry. Why? He wasn't the only one. I believe there was six of them. The late great, in reverence, I want to stand when I say his name, Archbishop Didon Nersoyan was the one who ordained him. He ordained, I believe it was six of them. All fine men who served the Armenian Church. But the needs of the church outweighed the rules of the church. I mean, think about it. 1940s, just 20 years after a genocide that has cleaned out your population. You're here in America. You need to have priests. And the rules of the church say marriage before being ordained. Okay, go get married. Yeah, like that's an easy thing to do. Yeah, just go find somebody and then get married. What are you talking about? And yet Archbishop Nersoyan, in his wisdom, knew that he needed priests. And he made a decision. And I'm sure he got his criticism, his share of criticism, but he made a decision that he needed priests and he would ordain them and give them the right to get married. Economia playing out in its true sense. In the same way, unbaptized. In the same way, suicide. What are you going to do? Tell the family, no, I can't help you. I'm a servant of Christ and you've come to me. I can't help you today. I can't be passion. I cannot be love. I cannot be understanding today. No. That's where you say, okay, God, give me the wisdom to make this decision. You make your sign of the cross. You offer your prayer. And you move forward. And so, in talking about suicide, yes, it's wrong, but you're there as a passionate person, as a compassionate person, to help that family. And my final thought on this is depression. Depression is very real. We need to treat it in its real way. So many times people are down, and we'll say, oh, come on, let's get up. You can take control of it. You can change matter. Well, in reality, you're the only one who can. You are the only one who can. And I'm the first one who will tell you, you know, get some positive thinking going on. But there are some severe depressions. I'm not talking about the depression we go through when we're down, you know. Go through it for a few hours, for a day. But when you're sitting there day in and day out, staring at a ceiling, when you don't know what's going on and you can't take control of it, it's time to seek some professional help. It's time to push yourself beyond the usual thing. And for people on the outside looking in on someone who is depressed, it's time for us to stop saying that, oh, you'll get over it. Or come on, let's go find somebody. It'll make you feel happy. Let's go to a dance. Let's go to the bar. Oh, we need to treat it as it is, as a serious affliction of the soul, as a serious affliction of the spirit, of the mind, and understand that there is help available. And maybe it's beyond us, but we need to be there supportive and to help. These are my thoughts. I was going to go in another direction today as I was preparing for the next step, but of course, when Robin Williams' passing hit us, I think it shocked a lot of us, because on the outside, you look at him, the laughing, jovial character that he was, one of many talents and voices, one of many personalities on stage, on film, on TV, a great talent, a creative talent, a creative energy. Now gone. We mourn his passing, but we also take an opportunity to think about some of the more unpleasant things in life. And I hope I was able to share with you some of my thoughts today on this edition of The Next Step. Okay, if you found this to be important, just wait till you hear what Susie has to tell you.
Thanks, Father Vosgen. Hi, this is Susie once again to thank you for your heartfelt prayers and support for this ministry. Since 2008, we have been broadcasting every week and distributing these broadcasts free of charge. We are now in the seventh year of broadcasting and heard on 6 continents. The Next Step is entering homes and communities proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution today. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We look forward to your participation and words of encouragement. Write to us 24/7 at feedback@epostle.net. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to The Next Step with Father Vosgen.
Thank you, Susie. You know, if you enjoy this ministry, if you find value in it, it's very important to become part of it, to share the goodness that God has given you with this ministry, because we're reaching out places that we never thought before. 7 years ago when we started, we never thought that we'd be hitting so many lives in the way that we are. But it takes money, it takes talent. It takes talent in the sense that, you know, all of our collective talent. I'm just blowing my horn and saying, okay, it takes me the talent. No, but it takes talent. The people who engineer, the people who put it up on the websites, it takes resources. The website costs money, okay? The places that we put it and the time. So if you want to get involved with us, it's really easy to do. Click on that donate button. You'll see it on epostle.net. You'll see it on our Facebook page. I believe it's there. And anyway, there's many ways to donate. Most importantly, keep us in your prayers. When you say a prayer for your family, for your loved ones, also include us, Father Vosgen, Susie, Ken. Remember the epostle team over here, because we are in need of those prayers. It's really on those prayers, because of those prayers, that we have moved forward in the way that we have. In fact, we're going to be going to Armenia end of September and hitting it there for a couple weeks on a new venture. I'm looking forward to sharing that with you in the coming episodes of The Next Step. And as I said today, we also did a compass, a very interesting one, about Land of Enchantment. That's New Mexico, of course. Here in the United States, it's called the Land of Enchantment, but also there is some enchanting stuff that is happening, well, at the cradle of civilizations. I'm going to be sharing that with you on different podcasts and different blogs, and I hope you will follow us. Hey, listen, I want to call it a day today. I want to thank you for joining us today and being with us. I hope today's show was a difficult topic, but at least I hope it was informative and gave you a different perspective, one to look at life, one to look at love, the experiences, the emotions that we have in that thing we call life, and the very fundamental questions of who we are, where we're going, what we're doing here. It all comes together, right? It's an Armadoxy approach. We take pride in that. Hey, listen, for the wonderful team who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us on Facebook throughout the week, and of course, here on The Next Step next week.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off-balance top visits.